Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4 to 6 with A&B, your Ohio State podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landis, joined by Ari Wasserman after what I think, Ari, I consider the most interesting midweek press conference that I have covered in what is now my eighth season on the Ohio State beat, in which Ryan Day did not say much, but in not saying much, I felt like said a lot, and essentially, after giving multiple opportunities to express confidence in his defensive coordinator, did not, and then at the end said he's still our coordinator, and I found all of it very odd, and I'm not really sure how to consume any of it. Yes, Ryan, is Kerry Combs still your defensive coordinator? Yes, but. Like, what is that? Somebody commented on my story and said, well, in the Midwest, yes, but is just a thing that people say and doesn't actually mean anything. And my response was, Ryan Day's from New Hampshire.
I've lived in Ohio for 10 years. I never heard anybody say yes, but. I say yes, bud. Okay, I say okay, bud.
Yeah, bud.
The way that Ryan Day answered the question today about Kerry Combs being Ohio State's defensive coordinator was how you used to answer when I say I love you, or how you used to answer when I say you're my best friend.
It's how I still answer when people ask me if you and I are best friends.
Yeah, but no. All kidding aside, though. You wrote a really, really good column about this on Tuesday, shortly before we started recording, and I urge everybody who is a subscriber to The Athletic to go read that, and if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, subscribe to The Athletic and then go read that.
TheAthletic.com/4-6, 50% off.
It's very, very difficult to envision how Ohio State moves forward after there was, like, I mean, some people say, like, there's no ringing endorsement, or that was a ringing endorsement, which is the death kiss. It's just like that was worse than confidence, right? You know, like when Athletic.
That was not a vote of confidence. That was a vote of no confidence.
People think is the kiss of death, right?
Yeah,
that was worse than the vote of confidence. And explain your story a little bit. It's like, how does Ohio State move forward when publicly the coach is. I don't know if this is too strong, but just basically instilling zero confidence, throwing the defensive coordinator under the bus by not. And this is the thing about it too, Bill. Believe it or not, you don't have to say anything to make your point. And Ryan Day said nothing and made his point.
Yeah. And it's not, I don't even know if I'd say that he necessarily threw Kerry Combs under the bus, because like Kerry Combs hasn't done a good job. I was just kind of surprised by it. One thing I will say is, like, if you're an Ohio State fan and you were hoping that Ryan Day would be pissed off, like, Ryan Day's pissed off. How he's expressing that is interesting, because it did feel throughout most of his press conference on Tuesday that he was just like, the offense is fine, and it's like, we got to get this thing fixed on defense. And he was asked in a few different ways, basically questions that could have led him to expressing some kind of confidence in Kerry Combs as being the right coordinator to get this thing turned around. And he didn't do that. And then Doug Lamorese said, like, hey, is Kerry going to call defensive plays this week? And Ryan said, well, I don't want to get into that, which is, you know, to me is an answer of no. But I suppose the answer can still be yes. And then we got through all of it. It was 30 minutes. Almost all of the questions were about the defense. We got through all of it. And even at the end, like, I still felt I needed to ask, and I did. Like, Ryan, yes or no, is Kerry Combs this team's defensive coordinator? And he said, I'll read his answer verbatim. He said, yes, he's still the defensive coordinator, and he laughed. And then he said, but we're going to look at everything, and we're going to keep working toward Tulsa, who, by the way, Ohio State plays this week, and figure out how the staff is working together, how the scheme works together, and then go from there.
I don't know what that means.
Which is like, neither do I. And I just don't know, like, he didn't undermine Kerry Combs because he is Kerry Combs' superior. But whatever the correct word is for that, that is similar to undermine, that's what I felt like he did to Kerry Combs on Tuesday. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I think if Ryan Day wanted to make a change at coordinator, however difficult that might be in the midst of a season, I think he'd be within his rights to do so based off of Kerry Combs' job performance thus far and how bad the defense is right now. But this was like almost worse than that, because he didn't make a change but said everything that you would say about a guy who you would soon be moving on from.
Another word, you know what I mean, for undermine is torpedo. Is that a good one?
Yeah.
Torpedoed him?
Torpedoed him. Yeah.
Thwarted him?
Yeah,
undercut
I think
him?
So. Undercut him? Yeah, cut his legs out? Yeah. I just don't know how Kerry Combs is like supposed to go into the defensive staff room now. Sandbag them. I just don't know how Kerry Combs is supposed to go into the defensive meeting room now and like start putting a plan together and then start making calls on Saturday. And maybe Ryan Day said all this because he knows that's not going to happen. But then why at the end are you still saying, yes, he's our defensive
You know player? What's crazy? And I guess this is – I got a few texts from college football staffers not at Ohio State. And they're basically laughing at how one loss has caused what seems to be a complete overhaul of the coaching staff. Because everywhere else, one loss doesn't turn into this. And you've seen at other places – other places, too, that have won big, Texas, Michigan, Notre Dame, you name it, like big-time programs who have suffered multiple losses based on the same symptoms that caused other losses, that how Ohio State has completely melted down after just one loss. And it is kind of interesting to me because January was not that long ago. The Alabama game was not that long ago. And when everybody wanted Kerry Combs gone after the Alabama game, we kind of thought that was a little premature, right? Because it was very easy to dismiss what happened with Alabama as Ohio State lost to a better team. And that's what happened, right? They lost to a better team. But in the context of Ohio State's defensive strategy in that game, they were nowhere near prepared enough to win the national championship game from a schematic standpoint. Would you agree with that? So even though Alabama was better, and that turned into a way for us to kind of accept what happened there, I think it was a symptom of an issue that needed to be corrected. So you go into the offseason, you chalk it up to losing to Bama, you do whatever you do. Then you come into the Oregon game in week two of the following season, and the defense, right or wrong, was not equipped from a coaching standpoint to compete at the highest possible level, which falls under Kerry Combs' purview. And if you put yourself in a position to figure out what's expected at Ohio State, it happening two times is enough to get fired. Like one time, okay. One time against Alabama, okay. And that's a bigger deal than any of them because I don't care how good Alabama is, you need to be prepared when you're four quarters away from winning a national title. I mean, you are right there. That's a big deal. But if it happens a second time, then everybody who was crazy for calling him to be fired after the Alabama game is now the majority of how everybody feels because it can't happen twice. So now when you put yourself in a position where you're Ryan Day and you're in charge of this team and this program, what is he supposed to do? It's like if you don't have confidence in Kerry Combs, which it certainly seems to me that he's lost the majority of it, if not all of it, based on the way that he acted or responded to questions in the news conference on Tuesday. What do you do? I know you mentioned that Arizona's former defensive coordinator is an analyst on the staff. I know that there's ways to, you know, rejigger things. But, like, in the middle of September. Has Ohio State ever fired a coordinator?
No. Ohio State has not made
major wholesale changes.
I don't know the last time Ohio State's made an in-season coaching change. Hasn't happened since I've been on the beat. I don't know the last time it happened before that. And it's a good question. Like I don't know what you do, which is why I don't think anything super drastic is going to happen. Ryan Day was asked about the person you're talking about, Paul Rhodes, former head coach at Iowa State, a veteran defensive coordinator at multiple programs, most recently Arizona, is on staff as an analyst. And Doug Lemerice asked Ryan Day, like, you have this guy on your staff. Would you ever consider elevating him and shuffling things around, putting this more experienced person, a coordinator? And Ryan Day's response was like, I don't think that'd be – it was funny. He said, I don't think that'd be fair to Paul. Not, I don't think that'd be fair to anybody else on the staff. He said, I don't think that'd be fair to Paul because Paul Rhodes in his analyst role doesn't get to coach the players. And he said he just doesn't feel like he'd have a good enough feel for the personnel to do something like that, which I would also then take and say, well, if he feels that way about a guy who's actually in the building, I'd imagine he'd feel even more strongly that way about someone who's not in the building, which is to say, like, I don't think he's going to bring in someone from the outside to coordinate this defense moving forward. I know some of that's out there and people are wondering about that. I'm not telling you I have information one way or the other. I'm just using that answer about Paul Rhodes to infer that Ryan Day's not going to do that. And I think that'd be really hard to pull off. So then what?
What
he does, I think reshuffling the staff, I don't know, like maybe it's something as simple as putting Kerry Combs up in the coach's box and let him try to call the game from there. It's a different vantage point. Maybe you call the game differently. Maybe you see things differently from there. Kerry Combs has always been a sideline coach. I think he likes that. He's an energy guy. He likes to give that to the players and receive it from the players. But his job is to see what's happening on the field and make the proper adjustments in game. And that's not happening. So maybe if he gets the bird's eye view, go Birds. He could do that.
I got you on one, didn't I?
In a better way. He could do that in a better way from the coach's box, which is like the same conversation we were having in 2015 with Ed Warner when it just turned out that he wasn't a very good offensive coordinator no matter where he was watching from. And that, I guess that could be the case here too. So maybe that's where you start. Maybe if Kerry does want to stay on the field because he just likes it so much down there, then someone in the box, whether that's like Al Washington or Matt Barnes, as more of the final voice and play calling. I think whatever the answer is, whatever changes come, they're going to be internal. Or they're going to come from the inside. They're not going to come from the outside. If there's even dramatic change at all, I think it's very possible. Like, we're having this conversation now. I wrote this column on Tuesday. Everyone's kind of in a tizzy about this. And then they play Tulsa on Saturday. Nothing's different.
How much can you change in a week, Bill? Like, that's the thing. I feel like they're kind of stuck.
Not a lot. Yeah, I think there is only so much you can do in the course of a season. It is funny. Ryan Day kind of like opened up. I think his answer to his first question was something about like, we're going to change things structurally. And the way my mind works is like, all right, here we go. We're going to start talking about two high safeties, maybe some more simulated pressures. Like, what kind of scheme stuff are we talking about? And like, it didn't click with me for like five other questions that changing things structurally meant changing the structure of the defensive staff. So I think that is going to happen. I don't know if we'll ever get a straight answer.
Were you disappointed that you weren't able to ask a technical defensive question about alignment and scheme?
I tried to. I said, hey, you know, no one else does this thing where you line up with one safety in the middle of the field before the snap. You think you might stop doing that? And I think I've asked that question like 10 times in the last year by now. And he just said, like, we'll see. So I don't know. I think that is a simple solution for the defense and also something that may like have to happen now because Josh Proctor, who is out for the season, which I think we did get to talk about in the last show. We know he was hurt. He's out for the year. He had a fracture in his leg in that game on Saturday. So he's gone. So the only guy they had who could like reliably play free safety, in my opinion, is now no longer available. So I think you have to play with two high safeties now. I don't know if the staff feels the same way or not. But, like, yeah, I tried to ask. And other people tried to ask, like, when you talk about scheme changes, what are you thinking? And Ryan Day's like, yeah, I'm not going to tell you that. So he's holding something.
So it's kind of like one of those things, too, where you have to just sit back and wait to see what the alignment looks like at Tulsa. But it's also like if Ohio State wants to reorganize how they play defense, why would you even show it at Tulsa? So you can't make any major
– Well, you got to play to get better at it. That was part of their thing in 2019. It was like the single high thing in 2019 worked really well. One, because they had Chase Young and Jeff.
I was going to say, is it just a better idea? They just had better players in 19.
They had better players in 19. They also didn't play anybody good until they played Clemson. Like, that schedule, they didn't play, particularly they did not play a good offense. And I'm not saying they played world beaters so far, but I think both these offenses they played so far this year are probably better than any offense they saw in that year until they played Clemson. But then they got, even when they got to the Michigan game that year, like, Michigan started taking advantage of some of that stuff that they do in that single high scheme. But Jeff Halfley switched things up a little bit, which is what, like, it went back, goes back to what I was saying last week. I feel like Halfley had a better feel for change-ups within this system because he's been in it longer. But yeah, it was also because they had awesome players. So I just think they need to. Kerry Combs has not shown any changeups this year. I think he showed a little in the way of changeups last year. But, like, they're there. I'm sure they practice them. They just don't play them in games. But I think if you're going to start playing them in games, it's not a thing where you, like, save it until you play a good team again. I think you need to put that on the field starting this Saturday so that when the time comes when you actually
so this you're this good at game, it. You're on the lookout.
I mean, yeah, I was on a lookout last week against Oregon and didn't see anything different. So it's going to be like that meme from The Office, like, no doubt about it. I'm ready to be hurt again. But yeah, I'm on the lookout. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know where it's going to start. I wonder if it starts more with, like, paring down the personnel, or if it starts with legitimately rethinking some of these scheme things.
Yeah. So I mean, the issue here is multifaceted. You have scheme issues. Uh-huh. You have some question in personnel, because I'm assuming if you went back and watched the tape, which you did, right? You probably saw people missing assignments or in the wrong position quite often. So you have that going for you, and coaching and scheme are one and the same, but they're also different. And then you just have physical talent questions. You know, you have talent questions in at the safety position now that Proctor's out. We're not exactly sure who the best linebackers are. Maybe that's still in question.
I am.
We're not sure if the best linebackers are going to play.
Yeah. Yeah,
it just seems like a mountain of issues, and where do you even begin? And, like, the other thing too that we're basically had us do this podcast right now is that I was through every single press conference of the Urban Meyer era in that room, and I don't ever remember there being a news conference like this where there were problems and there were clear frustrations from the head coach. And it is apparent this way. And, like, Urban expressed frustration, but this was vague and seemed daunting to me.
Yeah, he kept it pretty real. For as much as he kept it vague, I thought Ryan Day kept it pretty real. Like, it was easy to tell that he was not happy, and easy to tell that he is going to make changes on some level. Which I kind of respect it. But on the other hand of that, there is an interesting dynamic at foot here. And one of the things he did say, like, did kind of sit with me the wrong way. He said, he was asked, like, how bothered are you by this, that, like, you're in the second game of the year and you have to deal with this kind of stuff, which is basically to say, like, how upset are you that you have to basically be in the defensive room figuring this out. And he said, I'm not happy about that at all. That's part of the deal. For me to do what I need to do on offense, I need the defense to be on point. I need special teams to be on point. I need Mark Pantone to do a great job recruiting. I need Mick Marotti to handle strength and conditioning. The minute I get taken away for those type of things, it takes away from everything else that's going on offense. To be honest with you, that is disappointing. And it's like, that's great. You're the head coach. If you wanted to be an offensive coordinator, you shouldn't have taken the job. So, like, I don't feel bad for Ryan Day that he's upset by this. He picked the coordinator. He set this whole thing in motion. So, like, that to me, I thought that was a little off base, and that's, like, the kind of thing that I wonder, like, how that gets taken in the building. And I'm not trying to, like, fan flames of controversy here. Maybe everything's cool in the building and it's just a bunch of grown men talking shit out. But, like, that to me, that quote in particular was like, I don't know if I would have said that.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It's crazy how quickly things can go off the rails, man.
They were in an interesting spot before today. And now I'm just very curious.
I'm trying to figure out when the last time Ohio State was in such a weird position like this.
2018 felt pretty dysfunctional, and they had the weird thing there with Greg. They thought Greg Schiano was going to leave, and then he hired Alex Grinch, and then Greg Schiano didn't leave, so they had two coordinators, and one of the coordinators didn't have the role that he thought he was going to have because Greg Schiano didn't leave. There was some clear dysfunction there. And then, by the way, you had a linebacker coach who couldn't coach his way out of a paper bag, and a corners coach who I would probably say the same thing about, and Taver Johnson. So there was a lot of dysfunction there. I don't know if this is the same or not. I don't think this is the same, but it might be. I don't know. I'm not sensing a tremendous level of dysfunction at the moment. I think there is some anger, clearly, about how this has transpired, and some of it feels a little misdirected because, Ryan Day's offense has not been perfect. They're certainly complicit in that loss to Oregon, especially. And even I would say, in the way things went against Alabama, too, he didn't coach a great game against Alabama. The defense is what it is. It's not good enough. But it's not like Ryan Day's been perfect handling the thing that he says should be his focus, which is running the offense, either. So, there's plenty of blame to go around. But I don't know, the way some of it was couched today just, makes me wonder exactly how things are transpiring within
yeah, it's right now. Crazy because you look at Ohio State through the lens of a national championship. You compare it to Alabama, you compare them to Clemson, you compare them to Georgia. And it's right now, a single loss, for as much as we talk during the regular or during the offseason about how a single non-conference loss doesn't put Ohio State out of the discussion, and it's a long season, rattle off five wins, and the entire discussion's different. This does seem to be a bigger crossroads than I was anticipating, even with a loss. And it's not so much how does Ohio State fix their defense. It's are we trying to get to a point where we're understanding whether Ohio State can salvage a national championship season? Or are you so far down the line of that's not even remotely in the purview of this discussion? It's whether or not Ohio State can win the Big Ten at this point.
No, I'm not there. That to me is another level of dysfunction that I was kind of alluding or talking about earlier back in 2018. I don't think that's where they are. I think a lot of this can be good. I think a lot of good can come from this. If the way that Ryan Day was talking to us on Tuesday is indicative of the conversations they're having in the building, and I think they are, and they're probably more honest and real because Ryan Day is not going to say absolutely everything he thinks to us. Why would he? I think some good can come of that. I just don't know what it's going to look like, and I don't. Some of the things that Ryan Day said on Tuesday could lead you to believe, I think, rather easily that things are going to look drastically different, and I'm across the board, and the way the staff is structured, and the way the scheme is implemented, what the scheme is, and who plays. And I don't know if that's actually going to be the case. I don't know how realistic dramatic change like that across the board is when you're already into your season. And in a month, you got to play Indiana and Penn State.
I mean, a month is a long time. That's a good thing. A month is a long time.
Yeah.
And it's just you want to see them come out and maybe look a little bit different, maybe get more players on the field that are the best and playing the longest. He also visited the idea of rotation. What was his take on the rotation scenario, and did you buy what he had to say on that?
I thought those answers were odd. Like breaking it down, there were a couple different weird things. One on Seven Banks, who dressed for both games and didn't play, was not on the availability report for either game. Ryan Day was asked, like, what's the deal with Seven Banks? Is it injury related? And he said, like, no. And then he said, like, he should be healthy enough to play this week. Like, the gist that I got from it was it's like Seven Banks, like, wasn't good enough to get on the field, which is kind of shocking. Maybe I'm reading that wrong. So I thought that was weird, but apparently, you know, he says he thinks we're going to get Seven Banks on the field this week against Tulsa. On the linebacker stuff, Austin Ward asked this question, and I agree with the premise. Like, there's not a lot of consistency at linebacker because they're playing so many guys, and I think that's a position where you need to, like, settle in and get kind of a rhythm, and I think that's difficult when they keep, like, rotating out of the game every other series. But then Ryan Day's take on that was like, yeah, well, we haven't seen enough consistency to leave guys in there for longer. And I was like, well, one of those things impacts the other. Like, I think if you played Cody Simon and Taraja Mitchell all the time, you would get more consistent linebacker play. But because you don't, you're getting inconsistent linebacker play. So it's, there's like a disconnect there that I think is kind of strange. And also they said last week, or he said last week, like he gave the impression anyway, that they're going to start paring some of that stuff down, and then they didn't. They did on offense because they only played Mayan Williams and Trevion Henderson at running back, but they didn't do that on defense, except for maybe a cornerback where Denzel Burke and played almost all the snaps, and Cam Brown played a chunk too. But at safety and linebacker and on the defensive line, there's still a whole lot of rotation going on, which I think.
So what's the deal with Seven Banks?
One bit.
He's not on the availability report. Am I right about that?
I knew he was not. He was banged up during camp for sure. Like there were times, a few times, I think we were out there that Seven wasn't practicing. So I think there is an injury element to this. But for whatever reason, they didn't put him on the availability report either week. Because, I mean, they're not obligated to. They're not even obligated to make that report. They just do it because we asked them to. So maybe that's it. But it's odd to me that he didn't play. If he was a quote, emergency situation against Minnesota and then dressed again and seemingly looking ready to play against Oregon, and it seemed to me like you could have used your best defensive players on the field in that game, then he didn't play. It feels to me like that's more than just an injury thing. Now, Denzel Burke and Cameron Brown were really good in that game, so maybe they felt like they didn't need him, and like cornerback wasn't the issue in that game. So maybe that's what it is, but it's weird to me that he didn't play.
Weird.
One more thing on the personnel stuff. Just because I think I said on the last show that I didn't think JT Tuimoloau played all that well. Rewatching
the game. Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't want to push back at you because you're like Mr. I understand football. And it was like, I thought he looked awesome out there.
Oh yeah, I'll offer a mea culpa on that. My initial gut reaction to that was wrong, and rewatching it, he played pretty well and should play more.
Yeah,
my bad.
Let me ask you this: Ryan Day, in general, what do you think the temperament was, and how you felt he looked? How was he, you know, kind of handling this, and in terms of the way that the fan base might view him, like? A little bit of what I've said after the game when we recorded on Sunday of just like, this is his post Virginia Tech moment. I mean, does it feel that way in the building? Like, is this like a moment that could help define what we think of Ryan Day in 5 years? Cause it's like, I had this like weird thought today, and it was during a discussion with one of the college football staffers that doesn't coach at Ohio State. But that person said, Ohio State fans didn't realize how good they had it when they had Urban Meyer. And that when Urban Meyer was at the peak of his game, that's the peak of college football coaching in general. And it's just like things have been going so well from the first 2 years under Ryan Day. And I wonder, and I don't know that I believe this, but I wonder if this could be the beginning of a period of time where we start to realize just how good Urban Meyer was. Like, do you have the confidence in Ryan Day's ability to make necessary changes, make hard decisions, to make wholesale adjustments during major critical times in the season? And, like, is this a point in time where we're going to look back and remember him for how he did?
I think it's a really good question. I don't know that I have any – I don't want to say that I have any confidence one way or the other. I'm just, like, interested to watch it play out. You could say you have confidence in Ryan Day because you like Ryan Day. If you're like just like a Ryan Day fan, like of course you would say you have confidence in him. I think Ryan's a good coach. I think he's proven that he's a good game day coach. But this is like uncharted territory for him. This is like another step in his evolution as a head coach. He's got hard decisions to make, and he has to get this thing righted. So I think it's interesting that people don't know how good they had it when Urban was here. And I think that's probably true for 12, 13, and 14. But then they started to get away from him in 15 for some of these things we're talking about now. He made bad hires. He made the wrong hires in important positions. And I think at the moment it looks like Ryan Day made the wrong hire with Kerry Combs. But that doesn't mean they can't figure out a way to get that righted. And I'm just very interested to see if they do. I'm fascinated to see how Ryan.
What would you give him as a grade, though? We have some context of how he is as a hirer. Like, what's his grade? Is it Jeff Hafley A, everybody else C? Maybe F?
No, like I thought Hafley was a good hire. I thought Greg Madison was a good hire. I don't like Matt Barnes. I don't know. I don't know if it's like a super tangible impact there for me to give a hard grade on it. Like Kerry Combs looks like an F right now. Yeah. And like I think Madison and Hafley and Combs are the most important hiring decisions that he has made thus far.
There's some question about quarterback coach.
Yes and no. Like, he's the quarterback coach. Like, if you have a problem with him promoting Corey Dennis because you don't feel like Corey Dennis deserves it, I think that's fine. Whether or not that's actually impacting the team, I think I would push back on, because Ryan Day, at the end of the day, is the quarterback's coach. So, like, odd decision, I suppose, but in terms of its impact, I think it's minimal. I think the defensive coordinator hires have been much more impactful. And his first time around, I think he did a pretty good job. Clearly, and he is helped along by that because of how good they were talent-wise that year in 2019. And right now, his second hire, his decision not only to hire Kerry Combs before last season, but then to assess last season and then basically not make any changes coming into this season, I would give Fs to, for sure.
Yeah, because it's like...
So he's got an A and an F. What's that? That's like a 3.
I think that what you do, but 2.5. You say like, well, if I like Ryan Day, I can, you know, instill confidence in him because we don't see. But I think we have kind of gotten a window into whether or not Ryan Day is proficient in these areas. And I think you could make the case that in the summer when they lost Jeff Hafley, and two summers ago, and when they had openings this past summer, they had an opportunity to go out and get whoever they wanted. And Ohio State what would you say that the defensive coordinator at Ohio State is? Like the most or second most or top 10 at least most coveted jobs that's not a head coaching job in America? And it's like, so you go out and you get Kerry Combs because you know him? And at the time it seemed like it made sense to us. Kerry Combs is a Buckeye. He loves Ohio State more than he loves his family. He's been a tremendous recruiter. He developed talent in the secondary at a high level. But it's just like, no matter how close you are to Ohio State or what you've done in the past for Ohio State, I'm not necessarily sure that any coordinator at Ohio State ever should get the job without prior experience. Like, you have to be qualified to have this job.
Somebody else said that to me today, too, but it's like, But Jeff Hafley didn't have prior experience. But Jeff Hafley was brought here along with Greg Madison. I think they like help him along in that regard. And Greg Madison was here last year. It's kind of strange. Like I feel like Greg Madison was like very integral in 2019, in just like helping them get their shit back together defensively. And like in the end, Jeff Hafley might have been the shot caller there, but I think that Greg Madison's influence mattered greatly. And then last year when Kerry came, and I don't know if this is true or not, it's just like the vibe that I got was that like Greg Madison was just sort of like ostracized a little bit. Just like he was there, but he didn't feel particularly influential. And then now he's not here at all. And now you look in that room and it's like a coordinator who appears to be in over his head. And like Larry Johnson's been coaching ball for a long time, but there's no one else in that room that's a coordinator experience. And I think let's count Paul Rhodes. But I do think that there is a glaring lack of experience at the top that is coming into play here in a bad way for Ohio State.
Yeah, and I mean, it's super easy too to be like, well, you can't hire somebody without coaching experience when it blows up. Like if Kerry Combs would have been the perfect play caller, then you don't even think about these sort of things. But that's the hardest part about making $6 million a year is that you have to be right. So if you thought it was the best case scenario to hire somebody who is a top-notch recruiter with familiarity with Columbus and Ohio State, it makes total sense to go hire Kerry Combs. But the one thing that I will say is, if you think about where Urban Meyer got into most trouble, where was it? It was hiring people he knew. And it's just like you kind of got to get out of that box a little bit, I think. You know, and you put yourself in a position where, you know, you open up. It's kind of like a sports journalism job on a pro beat at a major publication. The second that there's a Utah Jazz opening to cover the Utah Jazz for the Salt Lake City Tribune, which might sound like a job you could be interested in another lifetime. Every single person.
I may or may not have applied for that job once before.
Every single person that does what we do or is climbing the corporate ladder or the journalism ladder to being a recognizable beat writer would apply for that job. Okay, that's a step ladder job. That's one thing. Two would be like national college football reporter for the New York Times. That job I would apply for tomorrow. Maybe. Sorry, guys, at The Athletic. I'm very happy. You get what I'm saying. There's top-level jobs, and you know, you might be kind of interested in the Salt Lake Tribune job, you know, if that's something that's interesting to you, but everybody's interested in the New York Times job. And that's Ohio State's defensive coordinator position. And it's just like, you go out and you get the best person for that job, regardless of how many years they spent in Ohio or what they've done in the past. If they don't have, like, you name a single coordinator on the planet that wouldn't want that job. It's like even coordinators at other big-time programs would leave for that job. So it's like you can't,
for sure.
you can't fall into the trap. It's like, and listen, Kerry Combs is not Bill Davis, okay? He's a decorated, beloved member of the Ohio State community with a national championship ring and somebody who developed multiple first-round draft picks. So, like, if you're one of these people of just, like, fire Kerry Combs, he sucks, he's a fake Buckeye, you're an asshole. I mean, he's done a lot for this university, and they have a national championship ring in part because of his hard work. That said, I don't know if all of those things are qualifications to being a defensive coordinator.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And listen, when Ryan Day made the decision, and I feel like we're kind of talking about, like, Kerry Combs is no longer the defensive coordinator. He still is, for now, anyway. Ryan Day made that decision, like, I can't remember what I wrote exactly back then. And I'm the type of person, too, who, like, when personnel decisions like that are made, like, I don't really have a hard take on it either way when they happen. I like to see things play out. But, like, I could kind of get behind it because I knew that Kerry was a good cornerbacks coach. I knew he was a really good recruiter. And he had spent 2 years in Tennessee with Mike Vrabel and Dean Pease learning what I thought was a pretty intricate and interesting defense. And, like, I was excited to see what he took from that and brought to Ohio State. The answer, it turns out, is nothing. And I don't know if that's because he's incapable of doing it. Because
well, that's the thing that's really hard to being in this situation is Urban Meyer, when he was here, was an offensive-minded head coach and would act like he didn't know what the hell was going on defense. He's like, I don't even go in those rooms. I don't know what's going on in there. But it's like, is the single high safety thing a Ryan Day mandate? You hire somebody, they've got to come in and they have to run that defense? Because that makes the job less attractive.
Yeah, and maybe that was at play, too. It did not seem like the net was cast particularly wide when Ryan Day made that hire. He seemed to lock on the carry pretty early on, though. But yeah, like I think I said on the last show that if Kerry Combs was given carte blanche here to run whatever defense he wanted, I don't think he'd run this defense. Like, Ryan Day's the head coach, so, like, what he says goes. And I guess at the end of the day, that's all that matters. But that's another one of the things that, like, bothered me today was, like, someone asked Ryan Day, like, are you going to be in the defensive meeting rooms more going through all this? And he said, well, not with the intricacies of the defense. Well, like, that's already happened. The defense looks the way it does is because you want it to look that way. So, like, don't pretend like you're not involved with the intricacies when, like, the way you align is because you want it that way. So, like, it felt to me like he was passing the buck a little too much today defensively because, like, ultimately this all comes back to him. He picked the guy. He picked this preferred scheme. And, like, that doesn't mean he won't be willing to change on it. But, like, I don't know. I didn't feel like he owned enough of that. And maybe that's on us, too, for not asking him questions in which he could have owned enough of that. But, yeah, I do think it was when he was looking for a coordinator, it was kind of like, here's what we do. Do you want to come coach this? And now I think Kerry Combs has found himself in an uncomfortable position coaching a defense that I don't think is particularly to his liking. It's not to say that if he was coaching his own deal, he would have the feel or make the right calls, and this would be an awesome defense. But again, as I've said before, I'd like to maybe see him get a shot at that before we just close the book on Kerry Combs as defensive coordinator, but I don't know if he's going to get that shot because I don't think that that's going to happen with this defense moving forward. I think they're still going to play a ton of cover one and a ton of cover three. And the changes, I think, will be minimal, if any. But, yeah, it's an interesting situation.
Yeah, and here's the other thing I wanted to make sure that we did on this podcast, 36 minutes into it. Last year when Cam Brown got injured, it was very easy to say, hey, that's unfortunate. He's a young stud. He'll get back. Ohio State will be fine. Turns out that was an instrumental loss to that defense, right? Josh Proctor is out for the year. Like, that is a major blow at the worst possible time.
At the worst probably possible position for them, too, to play defense this way. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. Ryan Day said a thing about, like, Bryson Shaw today that led me to believe that they weren't particularly happy with how he's played, and I think everybody listening to this would say the same thing. Not to rag on a guy. He's far from the only reason why the defense is bad. So I don't know if he's just, like, the starter at free safety now and that's it, or if they start doing some different stuff. Like, I would like to see them align with two safeties before the snap and put, like, Ronnie Hickman or Lathan Ransom back there, or put Ronnie Hickman and Court Williams back there, or Lathan Ransom and Court Williams back there, or Jansen Dunn, who I thought, you know, played okay in the spring game. It's a spring game, so I guess that doesn't mean anything. But they have intriguing athletes, and most of them are pretty young and guys who haven't played a ton. I'd like to see them get a shot and maybe throw those guys back there and see what they can do in a system that looks a little different but is largely the same in terms of their calls and stuff. But, yeah, if they're just going to line up like they've lined up the last two-plus seasons and don't have Josh Proctor anymore, who I thought was really turning a corner. Like, he was good in spurts last year. I thought he had been pretty consistently good in the snaps he played in the two games this season. And if they're just going to, like, line it up like they've always lined it up without him there and try to work in somebody else to play that spot, like, that does not sound like something that's going to end particularly well for Ohio State to me. Like, that's a big time.
Yeah, it's a personnel issue.
Yeah, they have not – they have – for it being such an important position on the defense – the way they've recruited it has been interesting. Now, I think they recruited Lathan Ransom thinking he could play that spot, and it, like, to this point, I guess it's worked out that we felt like they haven't had to play him there, and in the meantime found out that he's pretty good in the other safety spot where he's essentially functioning as a slot corner. So maybe he's just the next guy up. But it's like, in terms of who they've recruited since they switched to this defense, it's basically him and Jansen Dunn. Which is, I don't know how much confidence that inspires in people, but I would at least be interested in seeing what they can do, especially now when you're playing Tulsa and Akron is going to be a bloodbath in 2 weeks. But it'd be interesting. Like, I think maybe that's where most of the change comes in. I think in the end, the changes might be more personnel-based than they are scheme-based.
Yeah. It's a triple threat right there.
Yeah. Is it personnel? Is it scheme? Is it coaching?
Yeah.
It's everything.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index. Seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
It was a very interesting day. Fascinated to see what happens now. Ryan Day was the only one that spoke on Tuesday, which is also weird. Usually we get some players and maybe a coach. We did talk to Kerry Combs after the game, which I'll give him credit for, because there have been times in the past here where assistant coaches have not had good days and their players had to kind of answer for that. Kerry Combs did come up and talk to us after the game, so I'm not surprised he didn't talk today or on Tuesday. We'll see who talks on Wednesday. We don't know yet. And then we'll get Ryan Day again later in the week on Thursday, maybe get some more clarity on where this is going. But they are in a fascinating position. Like, I think a lot of the tone of this might have felt doom and gloom, but I don't feel that way. I don't know if you
feel
I feel like that. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Do you? Like, I don't feel like this is about to implode. Do you feel like this is about to implode?
I think it imploded.
It already has imploded?
There's no, like, the thing that always like made me chuckle a little bit, and maybe that's not the right way to put it, but when Urban was the head coach, every single time they lost, it was a major bomb that went off and heads had to roll or changes needed to be made or that could never happen again type of a thing. And the thing that we always used to say when these things would happen was, well, good thing Ohio State lost, because now they have paid the consequence for something that was wrong and it's going to force them to make it right, right? Ryan Day said that on Tuesday. The fortunate thing that, you know, of this is now that we know there's a problem and we can fix it. And it's like a real, really, really good coach shouldn't have to lose in order to make those changes. So Ohio State lost a game that in reality doesn't take them out of the playoff hunt, because if they win the Big Ten and there's one loss conference champion, I'm sure they'll be in. But it takes away all their benefit of the doubt. It puts them in a situation where they have to be perfect. And I have real, legitimate questions about all three things on defense: scheme, personnel, and coaching. And I don't think I've ever been in that position as a reporter covering Ohio State in my entire life. Like, I...
Not in 2018?
I don't think personnel was... They were bad. But by the time the Maryland game had already happened, they already imploded as a program. Like, the Maryland game was awful, but who did they lose to earlier in that year? Was it Purdue that year? So, like,
Purdue.
I mean, the cat's already out of the bag. So, like, if Ohio State goes up and gives 550 yards up to Maryland this year, then I guess, you know, you could say it's just like 2018. But in my opinion, the way that Oregon game played out was worse than 18 in terms of how wide open people were and how hopeless it seemed. And I know that Oregon is a better team than Maryland, but like, Ohio State now is going into week three not knowing for sure if their head coach has any confidence whatsoever in their coordinator on defense, and now with Josh Proctor's injury, not sure if we have the personnel that's in place in order to fix the problem. And then, of course, you won't know for sure if the problem is even fixable until they play anybody good, which isn't for another month. So, like, I guess true implosion is complete removal from college football playoff discussion, which is something Ohio State hasn't ever had to do. Like, the last time that they were out of the college football playoff talk was when? During the regular season. Like, we thought they were out of it all of 2014 when they weren't, but that was the first year.
17 after they lost to Iowa and they had two losses.
Iowa was their second loss that year?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oklahoma, that's right. Earlier in the year, but even then it was like, oh
yeah, weren't they still like fifth or sixth at the end of that year?
I was like, can they do enough to? Because they still got to the Big Ten championship and won, and then went to the Cotton Bowl. So I think there was even some talk then, like, oh, can they get in as a two loss team? Be the first one to get in as a two loss team, which will also happen again if they lose again this year, which I don't think is going to happen.
What don't you think is going to happen?
I guess it could. That they're going to lose again this year. I don't think they're going to lose again.
I wouldn't bet that they're going to win out.
Because I think they do have serious defensive flaws that I'm not 100% confident are going to get fixed moving forward. I'm just not sure they play another team that can exploit it.
I don't think Oregon is that much better than Penn State. I don't think Oregon's that much better than Michigan.
Personnel-wise, I think you're right.
Michigan maybe runs a style that's a little bit harder for them to exploit what Ohio State got exploited by. And, like, listen, there's one play design that got linebackers and safeties mixed up a few times that, you know, bit them in the butt a little bit. But, like, I don't – like, Oregon might be a two- or three-loss team. Like, I think once we get some context, like, I don't think this loss is very easy to sit back and say, you know what, Ohio State lost to a top-five team. It's like – they're top five because they beat Ohio State, not because they were top five before. Like,
oh yeah, no, I don't think they're a top 15 team
this year, without their best player too. But they beat them without their best player.
I also won't be surprised if Oregon doesn't lose again because their schedule the rest of the way is not particularly tough. I think like UCLA is the best team they play the rest of the year. So like if they're 12-0, yeah, I'm not going to be shocked by that. That'd be great. That'd be great for Ohio State if they're 12-0, obviously. I guess I based that on too. Like Oregon did like one thing, and Ohio State like never adjusted to it. And other teams will try that one thing, and I'm hoping that Ohio State adjusts to it. But I guess it's possible they don't because of 2018.
But if there's one thing that can catch them like that, it's not the only thing that will.
Yeah, I guess that's true. They also, I think Joe Moorhead's a pretty good coordinator too, and I don't know if they're going to come across that brain power either moving forward.
You know, I would not be surprised if they didn't lose again. I mean, I think that Ohio State is immeasurably better than all the – I think they're immeasurably better than Oregon.
They are, but I will say, like, we talked about, like, win totals early in the year, and I was like, well, if my choices are, am I going to pick Ohio State to lose two games or go undefeated? Like, I'm always going to pick Ohio State to go undefeated. They are much closer to a two-loss team talent-wise, particularly on defense, than I thought were coming into the season. Like, having watched them now play two games.
What's the definition of implosion? Is implosion out of the losing or out of the playoff discussion?
I think it's more intricate than that. Like, I don't think if Ohio State doesn't make the playoffs this year that it is an outright implosion. It's like kind of like how that feels along the way. And if there's just like clear dissension within the staff and the players and things just aren't collecting. So like, I don't think there's like one thing that can happen to lead me to believe that the season has like gotten away from them. It's more of a feeling out process, I think, over the course of the season, which I'm on alert for sure, but I don't think they're there yet.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's two different types of implosion. There's what's going on in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center and what it means to be a fan of the team. And it's like Ohio State's one more loss away from having an irrelevant year.
Yeah. No, I think that that's right. And I also, like, whenever – it's so funny to me. Like, the thing you were saying earlier about how people react around here when Ohio State loses a game. And oftentimes to me, it feels like such a disproportionate reaction. But – I think like we should also be in tune with how the fan base feels. So I think we're talking about some of these things, but I also don't know, like, are we all totally overreacting right now? Like, I have no idea. I think it's possible maybe we're all totally overreacting.
I don't know that we're overreacting. Ohio State's has a certain standard of competing for and making the national championship and making the playoff. And I think it's possible that we might have misdiagnosed how good Ohio State was. Just because it's easy to look at recruiting results and say, hey, look how loaded they are. And it's like I look at their recruiting results and I say, hey, this team better win a national championship sometime in the next 3 years or Ryan Day failed. But it's like also this team might have just not been a playoff team this year. And it's like, you know, and I think that we're so wrapped up sometimes in comparing Ohio State to Alabama that we forget that they're not.
That's true. And I also think like, I think this could end up being a 10-2 season where Ohio State doesn't make the playoff without that being a referendum on the direction of the program. Does that make sense?
I would agree with that because the only thing I care about is who's coming in.
Right, and that's still pretty good.
That's Alabama good. But the thing that will keep me up at night, and I tweeted about this last week and people were making fun of me, but I said, when you die, did you see this? When you die, you get three questions to God. My question one would be, how does Alabama do it? And everybody's like, ha, 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 you moron. You don't know what Nick Saban is? You never heard of Nick Saban? And it's like, yeah, dudes. I freaking heard of Nick Saban. I want to know specifically how he's managed to take a program and never, ever drop off at a seismic level the way that Ohio State feels like they've dropped off this year. It's like,
what? You know what's going to happen? You're gonna get up there, and you're gonna get your three questions, and you're gonna go up to God, and you're gonna say, "Hey, here's my first question: how does Nick Saban do it?" And then, but when you get there, like God's back will be to you, so you won't see God, and then God's gonna turn around, and it's Nick Saban.
I mean, it's possible because, like, we joke about it all the time, but like, it is something that bothers me as a reporter because I want to do a good job, and I want to provide as much context as I possibly can to the people who are loyal enough to not only listen to us. To pay for our content. And that question is, what is stopping Ohio State from being Alabama? And it's something that I tried to discuss with you for a long time after the national championship game. And like the answer that we can provide you is, well, Nick Saban's a genius. But I want to know specifically, what is that genius? What's the difference? How do they continue to do it? Because it's just like, you look at Ohio State's roster and how it's built up, it's not quite at Alabama's level. But when's the last time Alabama was in this situation where they were questioning their coordinator in week two, lost to a severely under or a severe underdog in terms of talent, and then like there seemed to be major hiccups within the program? It's like, I know they lost a few times to Ole Miss when they shouldn't have, you know, but like the amount of national championships that team has won and the successes they've had, it is pretty remarkable. And it just takes Ohio State losing for you to remember to say, hey, you know what? Ohio State just lost maybe one of the best quarterbacks in college football history. Their defense lost a ton. They just don't have it this year. You know what I mean? And like my brain and the way that it works based on the talent that Ohio State's brought into the program has a very hard time identifying that. And I still think that Ohio State might be able to average 45 points a game this year. And I still think that they've got two of the best receivers in college football. Their offensive line is one of the best in college football. C.J. Stroud will probably get to where he needs to be. But just like, well, you know what? Their linebackers and safeties aren't very good, and their defensive line gets no push. You know what that means? No national title. And it's just like, at Alabama, it's like, when's the last time you're like, their linebackers stink, and I'm not saying Ohio State stink. I'm just saying that the production right now. And their defensive backs are discombobulated. They had a major injury. You don't know if they're going to play single high safety. There's no push on the defensive front. Like, when's that ever been an Alabama problem? Never.
Yeah, I mean, I don't cover Alabama closely enough to know the right answer to that. I will say it did feel like Alabama was asking some existential questions about itself defensively last year after, I think, like they almost lost to Ole Miss, right? Or like the Ole Miss game was like super high scoring. They didn't almost lose.
Yeah, Ole Miss scored, I think, points. Like 45 or 50 on them, but they were never in danger of losing.
Yeah,
but yeah.
So like, and they won the game. Yeah, they won the game. So like, I think that has happened. I don't know if it ever happens to this level because it always just kind of comes back to Saban. They have a ton of staff turnover there, but it's usually because they're going off to get better jobs. I don't think people get fired for poor job performance very often there. But I could be wrong. Someone listening to this knows more about Alabama. Please tell me, because I'd like to be educated on that. But it could
it's
also
just the sheer
just
amount
be,
of
though,
production
that,
of national championships. That's all you need to know. Of how many times they've played and competed at the highest level, it's more than anybody on a consistent basis, regardless of what they lost. I mean, we're talking about Alabama right now. You know what they lost after last year? They're back. Mm-hmm. They're there. They're going to the playoff.
We think they're back.
I know.
We'll see.
I mean,
we'll
maybe
see. They played their typical helmet game against the Miami team that is clearly
Oregon
not very
was
good
a helmet game.
Lost to App State. No, I know. But we do this with Alabama every year. Alabama beats a name, and then wins its second game because it plays some cupcake. We do it all the time, and most of the time we're right. Almost all the time we're right, but we're not always right. So like, Alabama is always very good. Alabama's going to go to the playoff. It's probably going to win the national championship.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying like Alabama again. Yeah, of course, it's what they do. But I'm not like, here we go, same old Alabama because they beat Miami and Mercer.
No, I know. It's just how many national titles has it been? It's insane.
Yeah, but it's not even worth, like, Ohio State is not, never has been, never will be Alabama as it is currently constructed.
What's the difference?
So, like, D's nuts jokes.
I just wish I could explain that. What's that difference? It's the same thing of, like, why does Texas always stink? Why? Nobody can say why. It's just they do. I want concrete explanations for things, and when they can't be provided because either they're secret or because it's unexplainable, it bothers me.
You appeal to a higher power.
Yeah, that's my second question. God, why can't Texas be back?
Why is Texas never back? Yeah. What's the third question?
How does Chili's make a hamburger 1,300 calories without the bun? Go look at Chili's menu and tell me how nachos and cheese is like 1,700 calories for a small plate of nachos.
Yeah. Do you, before we wrap up here, you got a pick for Ohio State versus Tulsa?
52-17. I don't know. Tulsa wins.
Here's
Tulsa. No, Ohio Tulsa State's wins. A 26-point favorite, like right?
Yeah, the first line I saw was like 31, and then it was immediately 26. And I don't know if like that got bet down that quickly or if the original line was just wrong.
I never saw 31.
And they corrected themselves.
26 seems like I think 56-28 would be a good guess. with a cover.
Yeah. Tulsa's got a pretty good running back, and Ohio State's run defense is poopy at the moment. So it's poopy. Yeah, so I think like they're not gonna shut out Tulsa, but I also think they might score 60. Tulsa, which by the way lost to UC Davis in its opening weekend, and then somehow played a tight game with Oklahoma State in its second game, just isn't very good. There's times in the past where Tulsa has been good. They were pretty good when Ohio State beat them in 2016. They were decent last year too. They just don't look like they're very good this year. So I think I would pick Ohio State to cover, but I do think Tulsa's going to put some points on the board. Yeah, so I'll say 63-24.
What did I say? 56-28? 56-28 in the cover.
There you go. Buckeyes cover.
But if they score 28 points, will be the first. What if Tulsa scored on a toss left on the first drive?
If Tulsa lines up in an unbalanced formation and then runs to the boundary untouched for a touchdown, you have my permission to burn it all down. let's hope that doesn't happen again for Ohio State. Hopefully that's one of the many things that Ryan Day and them boys on the defensive staff are talking about when they hash it out in those defensive meeting rooms. So, all right, interesting times for Ohio State. But they're interesting for us to cover now, so you know I'm not too upset about it. Subscribe to The Athletic.
This is the time to subscribe, guys.
Athletic.com/4-6 gets you 50% off. I'll have a story later this week on C.J. Stroud, by the way. That's the this week's film study is dedicated to C.J. Stroud. That'll run on Thursday, I believe. Game Saturday, the Akron game's a night game for some reason, so not necessarily sexy opponents the next 2 weeks, but Ohio State remains inherently interesting. More so now than we thought they would be coming into the season. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys after the game.